Our next speaker is Dan Richter from Duke University, and Dan's going to be talking about woody biomass energy, amazingly. Let's push the down.
Good morning, everybody. A while ago, I read an article by an anthropologist, Carl Sauer, and I heard the University of Florida's contemplating eliminating their anthropology department, something like this. Eric, you got to work for human beings. In any event, Carl Sauer was a Berkeley professor, much beloved geographer as well as an anthropologist, knew quite a bit about geomorphology and soils, and he wrote an essay on the history of the economic exploitation of plants in the 1930s, and he left his last few lines, there was no conclusion, he left it wide open. Didn't know if humanity was going to continue in his view, the looting model of exploiting plants or move to a more sustainable yield model. Great essay, though. So if a subtitle might be, What Wood Can Teach Us About Energy, and I mean to say even nuclear energy people ought to look at wood, not only foresters and ecologists, but what energy also teaches us about wood is an interesting feedback as well. I owe a lot of what I've learned in the last couple of years from really a remarkable set of colleagues I've listed here, Dylan Jenkins, my colleague Joe Knight in the mechanical engineering department. Kara Cash is a private consultant as well as a character. Lou McCreary has spent his entire life, with most of it with state and private, working on wood energy, dating from his early work in the 1970s. Kazimir Nemestathy is just a brilliant mid-career energy forest person in Austria. And then last but not least is an electronic association I've had with Tom Kasten, who also got motivated in the 1970s. And he's mainly working with industrial thermal and electrical systems, but a brilliant thinker. I'll come back to a number of these people during the talk. I'd like to start with a couple of assertions. Maybe these are hypotheses. Maybe these are what's between the lines in this talk. But I would like to make the claim that merchandising wood, if merchandising wood for large-scale energy production is contemplated in the future, this represents a very fundamental development in forest management. It's not just the invention of new plywood or another product like OSB boards. This is a different relationship, one that we are returning to a relationship that we had in the past, and we didn't quite do so well in the 1700s. If you go back to how even relatively small populations treated the forest in both North America and in practically on all continents. And it goes on today in the developing world, of course. But across a wide range of forests, if we only look at the U.S. or North America, across a wide range of forests and planting objectives, from conservation and restoration objectives to more product-based objectives, forest management is limited by the low price of wood. In fact, some people would say the abysmally low price of wood. And so bioenergy systems recast this future of forest management by giving value to the lowest priced wood in the forest, for good and potentially ill. So another assertion might be that the sustainability of forest soils and ecosystems that supply wood for energy depends at least as much on the off-site energy production systems that will develop as on the in-forest practices used to manage and harvest energy wood products. And my talk is probably different from the rest of these talks this morning in that I'm going to emphasize these off-site, these out-for-off forest effects. These production systems that create the demands that pull the products from the forest, having eventually having the impacts on soil. I'll talk about soil a few times during the talk, but I'm most impressed by how the different kinds of models that we will be developing have large impacts, a large range of impacts on the soil. So given this new frontier, energy and forestry communities have huge amounts to learn from each other. These communities historically haven't interacted at all. And currently in many states and in many projects, these two communities are coming together at loggerheads. So here's some specific objectives of what I'll talk today. And a general roadmap. I'd like to talk about wood as the renewable heavyweight. Who gets all the press? The wind and the solar, sun and wind is great. But wood is the energy heavyweight. It's the one by tenfold and will be for a couple of decades probably the chief renewable resource that society is taking advantage of. This gets no press and is worth highlighting. The structural energy efficiency crisis has much to say about wood energy development. I'm not talking about insulating buildings or screwing in a nice fluorescent light bulb. It's what Tom Kasten talks about. The way we've structured our energy system is incredibly inefficient. And I'll come back to that because it has major implications on wood use. And I'm going to cast two potential future models for wood energy development. It's a bit simplistic, and they're worth thinking about. And one of those models would be a thermal system, heat or cooling, and then the other model would be an electrical generation system, with which we combust wood. So about this yield or loot, the question comes down to how can wood energy contribute to our national energy needs? And can it, for that matter? So we're all pretty familiar by now by supply studies. All around the country, there's been supply studies, state, national. They've been repeated. It would seem like from this point of view that's where the issues lie. Many state estimates suggest that on an annual basis, 1 to 10 million tons per year can be produced. National estimates range widely from 200 to greater than 5 million tons. These estimates are debated. There's a lot of wood out there, though, in one form or another. And I would like to make a comment that despite the frustration with really the complexity of this question, it's not as if there's a finite, we all know there's not a finite amount of wood there. There's a lot of dynamics to these flows of woods. But despite the frustration with the complexity of this question, the crudeness of these estimates, the numbers tell us a lot about wood energy. What do they indicate? They certainly indicate that while wood will not solve our overall energy crisis, wood energy can be very important to individual communities and potentially important to whole regions across vastly different forests, from forests in the West to forests in New England to forests in the South and the Lake States too, and potentially to the nation at large. So although this is not an energy source that's going to solve the energy crisis, so to speak, it has much to contribute, potentially. And these estimates indicate that. And then the second one is many supply estimates are surely conservative. And I'll go out on a limb here, but this is my own perspective. Many of you probably share this. There's very few, of the supply estimates include the impacts of this new product on the pulp stream. That's a very politically, economically controversial issue. There will be a lot of interaction here among these two low-value products, the pulp stream and the energy wood stream. There's nearly no low-value pulp. Let me regroup a little bit. There's nearly no estimates of what we might do with timber stand improvement, given that there's increasing value on these low-end products. And there's the supply estimates from energy plantations and what we might do with the forest and some forests in the future. These are few estimates. Most of the state estimates and the national estimates stay away from those potential sources of pulp that of low value wood that might come online in the coming decades. So I'll just say that within limits, and limits are important, wood energy is generally abundant in America. And like it or not, pulpwood production, especially in the Southeast, which I know is on a slow decline over many decades, several decades, since the 80s, the eastern forests can certainly benefit. Many people hold this point of view, can certainly benefit from timber stand improvement for restoration and conservation objectives. This is a very high-graded forest. Its species composition has definitely a legacy from our past abuse. There's a lot of potential for entering stands and manipulating tree species composition for a wide range of objectives. In the West, we have many communities proximate to forests with large fuel wood. In a best of all possible world, those communities could take advantage of some fire restoration and plug that wood in as a value-added product to a small combustion facility. And then there's underutilized urban waste stream. Some cities are great examples. St. Paul, Minnesota is perhaps the leading example of a fairly major, something like 50 megawatt facility in downtown St. Paul that utilizes only wood today from the city environment. And then there's the potential for wood energy plantations. All to illustrate a general idea that wood is fairly abundant in America. And don't count the power industry out for not noticing this. Here's my own, the company that runs the power that gives me the power of light bulbs in my house. This is Duke Power. And here's a strategy for 50% CO2 reduction in the coming decades. And if you look down here for renewables, here we have 2,000 more megawatts of on-peak capacity, and how are they going to get that? 60% woody biomass. It's not a small flow. So let me turn a corner obliquely a little bit and ask the question, how does wood, the supply, relate to the larger energy production system? Because this is a very complex relationship, and it's one that has direct impact on soil impacts, I'm going to maintain. So a little education here. It's worth, if only because the energy discussion, many people say, is not very mature. The energy policy discussion is all about transportation and electricity. Thermal is not valued, even though it's a third of our energy consumption in America. Not a lot of discussion about thermal. But there are three legs to our energy stool, you can say. Let's look at how wood stacks up against the other sources of energy. It's only been since 1880 where wood in the U.S. Went into second place. It was in second place in terms of an energy source until after 1900. These are remarkable curves from a amazing data set. If you don't know, the Energy Information Agency of the U.S. DOE has these numbers. And here's the wood flow. These are in interesting non-standard international units. I love this unit, though, although you'll be blasted if you publish in a BTU unit. But these are nice because the U.S. consumes about 100 quadrillion BTUs per year. Okay, 100 is such a nice round number, so let's work with that. And wood has over its the last 100-plus years provided up to about 2 or 3 quadrillion BTUs per year. And for a long time here, we had a steady slide down to about 1. And then the first energy crisis came, and boy, a lot happened there. And most of that had to do with the restructuring of waste in the forest products industry and capturing what otherwise would have been waste and utilizing that. And so what else is here? Here's the growth of coal, the growth of oil. Next one's natural gas, and we can all expect that one to natural gas to balloon. And here's nuclear. Nuclear has not yet reached 10 quads. And here we are without even trying, between two, at about currently about 2 quads per year in terms of wood. You might think that's pretty insignificant, 2 quads out of 100. Okay, I'll come back to that significance or not. Let's look a little deeply at the other renewables here. So here's wood, the wood pattern here, and I've scaled it up to 10 quads. And here's the growth of hydro. Much of that is from big dams that a lot of people don't call renewable anymore. The next one here is geothermal has come up to about 0.2 or 0.3. Here's wind and solar. So wind is booming in terms of the relative rate. But it's no wonder the Austrians and other Central Europeans call wood the renewable heavyweight. There's so much potential here, and it's pretty much an order of magnitude ahead of the other highly publicized renewables. That's pretty interesting to me. So altogether, greater than 5 quads is, in this definition, renewable currently. But what these consumption data don't indicate is anything about the structural inefficiencies of our current energy system. And so what I mean by that is nationally, the energy conversion efficiency, from looking at the content of the energy in the original fuel to how much is converted to what a physicist might call work, is on the order of less than a third. 30% or less. So, for example, most standalone electrical plants, whether they're nuclear or coal burning, and if they're only generating electricity by turning a turbine, they're recovering about a third of the energy content of the original fuel, and that's prior to transmission. Well, maybe you get the sense of the story here, but before I give you my sense of the story, let me give you one of my favorite quotes, and that's from Tom Kasten. Separate generation of electricity and heat, he's an industrial engineer, but the separate generation of energy and heat from his point of view is utter madness. So, but there is a rather large energy engineering community, particularly at MIT, has been pointing to the gains that can be captured from increasing what they call structural efficiencies, which they argue can be much more important than the development of renewables over the next couple of decades, and far less expensive. Boy, we should look at this. This is a pretty important critique, and Kasten likes to lead the charge, and every once in a while he'll issue a great quote like this, utter madness. But let's consider two energy models, back to wood energy in particular, and we'll have the standalone wood electricity plant. Kingston comes to mind in East Tennessee, but these are scattered throughout the country, of course. And these are supported by about 25 what are called RES programs, renewable energy portfolio standards. These are the 2020 programs. 20% of the electricity generation should be supported by what they call renewable sources by 2020, thus the 2020 name. Okay, so we have the wood energy standalone plants, and we have something that our group called advanced wood combustion. And this is a very different model, and this is valuing thermal heat. And by, I should say, valuing thermal energy, and that can include heat and cooling. And I'm going to use a case study of Austria, because they, 25 years ago, started along this AWC path, and they illustrate, they have a lot of technical data that's just fascinating. But let's just illustrate the two end members of what we might do with wood. And here again is a Wikipedia wood energy, and they're definitely apparently in the standalone model. And somebody's got a, I guess it's, I asked for the podium here. That's an old quote from Dale Johnson. If you ask for the podium, you better do it. So I better get into Wikipedia and put in a community scale version of wood energy. In any event, here's a little diagram, and of course the waste heat is a big component of this system. But these would range from 50 to greater than 100 megawatt plants. These are big facilities, medium size, I should say, but from a community's point of view, these would access wood from large woodsheds. They would have regional wood procurement and economics. Standalone facilities range currently from 20 to 40%. Probably 40% is not reached in any of them if it's just electricity, energy conversion efficiency. So most of the energy in the woods being blown out in waste heat, appropriately named. So here we have a thermally led AWC cartoon. These range up to 50 megawatts and often are pretty small because they can be tailored to an individual building. Much more local wood procurement and economics. They can be incrementally constructed as well. Incredibly high efficiencies here, 80 to 90%. So let me move into Austria here. And very quietly, we have about a 25-year history of local communities like Gersing, Austria, individual buildings, like in a small, very picturesque little village. Christian Rakos is a social science scholar, and he claims that the barriers to wood energy are much more social than technical. There's 1,200 of these facilities across the country, large and small, pretty uniform coverage. They've really pushed biomass into six markets, relying on district heating. Some of our communities and malls and sets of buildings have district heating. Many universities do, in which many buildings are heated from a central source. The district energy is district heating is an important part of many of these systems. But these systems can be tailored for big buildings too. It's much smaller scale. There's even a cash for clunker type incentive program in Austria, particularly tailored to communities with winter air pollution problems. Pretty interesting. And then the largest of all is an interesting plant, about 50, 60 megawatt plant in downtown industrials in the industrial side of Vienna. Most interesting is that the Green Party in Austria was a primary backer of this facility. In fact, the Green Party, according to Rakos, wanted a facility four times as large, and the foresters held them back. And even today, the sustainability is yet to be demonstrated, because if you go into the woodyard, there's a lot of high-value saw timber in the woodyard. But here's a great little slogan on the side, nice green vine or something, mit Liebe zur Natur, with love of nature. So there's been quite a bit of technological development over this 20-25-year period in terms of efficiencies. The currently installed community systems are incredible. So 90% of the energy in the wood is being transferred to work heat. Technological developments worked on the particulates and gas emissions front as well. And there's a host of very interesting recurring benefits that can be derived from this, and I won't go into details here, but they cross economic, social, and environmental dimensions. So meanwhile, back in the States, to pull this to a conclusion, we have these 25 state renewable energy portfolios. Many of them are beginning to be critiqued, which is probably a very good thing, and they treat this is a bit of an opinion, but they treat the energy crisis as if it's an electricity crisis. And these RES portfolios, these are these 2020 policy mechanisms, are forcing all of us to take notice of wood's promise and abundance, whether you're an environmental advocate who's a tree hugger or a forester. These policy frameworks are making us all recognize that wood is There's a lot of wood out there, and it might be wasted in a hurry if it's not used in the right way. So a problem is this. We're back to the question of yield or loot. And so my question is, will forestry professionals and the public support bioenergy systems that consume, for example, 3 trees to capture the energy content of 1? That's where I'm coming up with this 33% energy conversion efficiency. Think about the general public as they gain understanding of that. Or think of you as a forester with a bit of ethics in your portfolio. Is that something that's compatible with our ideas of sustainability, that 2 trees out of every 3 will go up in waste heat, particularly when there are such high efficiency, interesting thermal alternatives? Maybe I won't leave this question so open as Carl Sauer did. But let me, if I have a moment, 5 minutes, very good. If I can just end with some calculations about the national significance of wood and whether we can set goals that actually do have an energy source from wood that does have energy, that does have national significance. So let's go back to our 100 quads, our 100 quadrillion, 10 to the 15th BTUs per year U.S. consumption of energy. And there is a controversial study that's been revised, but I like Perlack's study, and there's some value to it. And if you take the amount of wood that he says was sustainable, and convert it to energy units with high energy thermal applications, that amount of wood could supply as much as 5 quads of energy, up from the 2 that we currently capture. Now, Zerbe and Skog have a study in which they say we should set a goal of 10 quads of wood energy, and it's a thermal goal. Supplied from wood energy products, TSI, energy plantations, and what they call vigorous fuel wood management. I'm not sure about what exactly that means. That's a lot of wood. And the key thing is here that they're linking these wood streams with high efficiency systems. So just to keep in mind, current hydropower is between 2 and 3, and contemporary nuclear is at 9. Of course, this is... Energy Department has their eyes on greatly increasing that 9. But the strategic petroleum reserve that we hear about every once in a while, how much energy is in that? 4 quads. Wow, that's a big barrel of oil down there. Amazing. So wood stacks up to these other significant sources of energy nationally. It's not going to solve our energy crisis, but it can certainly have major impacts on local communities and regions and the nation at large if we develop it well. So just to conclude, wood energy teaches us a lot about energy, I believe, and it does help us sort out Sauer's difficult dilemma between yield and loot. And primarily that's because of the great difference of these different models, future models, to capture the content of the energy that's in the original fuel. Because this is a 3-to-1 difference in energy conversion efficiencies. So this with this kind of an efficiency difference, this has a large impact on the way systems will respond in terms of sustainability. We must find a way to fit wood's many values. Wood has so many other values besides its energy content. It's not as if it's just exists in nature in large supply. There's many values that are financial, economic, social, and ecologic. And last but not least, a little bit of investigation down this path quickly leads you to the observation that the so-called developed nations of the world are still developing. In any event, I have one last thing for Jim Berger. I went home last night and created my own first draft CLEP model. And so here we got the regs and the practice acts, voluntary and required, depending on the state, and ownership. We got the regulators here. I think I have this right, Jim. But here the regulators span, air particulates is pretty important to combustion. There's water and land. Those guys interact with the loggers, foresters, and planters. Definitely first draft. Here's the lowly landowner. Maybe we should put the landowner more in the middle of this diagram anyway. And then here we have our evolving forests managed with bioenergy removals. So here's society's choices. It's a bit simplified, but on the other hand, these first two are so different, I think, that they're worth exploring. And I hope policymakers are more adept in future versions renewable portfolios. And that, last but not least, is the dotted line here, the biofuel cellulosic sled energy systems. And I'm not sure how they're going to impact this whole CLEP model. In any event, thanks for your attention.